Don't pay retail for your diamond engagement ring or gift. Come to cleanorigin.com. Founded by a leading family in the diamond industry for more than a century, we're experts in lab-grown diamonds because that's all we do. Clean Origin, the only diamond jewelers who give you a 100-day, no-questions-asked return on your purchase. Head to cleanorigin.com or one of our retail stores and mention code RADIO10 for 10% off your purchase. That's cleanorigin.com, code RADIO10.
I've got a wild story for you in today's oddcast that involves a 13-year-old girl, a gangster, and a scary threat on the phone.
We always have an odd one in the crowd.
So it's kind of odd.
We're decidedly odd.
Doesn't that strike you as a little bit odd?
No, it doesn't strike me as a little bit odd.
It's the Bob and Sherry Oddcast, the stuff we wouldn't, couldn't, or shouldn't do on the regular show. Now, here's the Oddcast.
I recently spent a weekend with my mom, which is like the most mundane sentence ever, except, you know, my relationship with my mom is unusual. You know, we were separated, didn't see or speak to each other from the time I was 12 till the time I was 28. That's a really long time. If you're a regular listener to the show or you've followed our careers, you may know that, you know, my parents had a really difficult marriage. My mom was a teenager. My father was 21. She was pregnant. It's an old story. But my father had a lot of very serious chronic mental health issues. He had bipolar disorder. He was unmedicated and untreated. And then he was self-medicating and self-treating with stimulants. It started with cocaine, and then it went to crack, and then it went to meth. The marriage was violent. We were desperately poor and always terrified and cold. My dad thought he'd be a cowboy, which is the kind of excellent judgment that you make when you're the dude I just described. And we moved. My parents were both South Philly, you know, kids. We moved to remote northwestern Wyoming. And instead of becoming cowboys, we became desperately poor and in the clutch of endless winter and violence and the ever-present threat of violence. Both my brother, my older brother and I, and my mom never expected to be around to have this conversation because we thought we were all going to be murdered by my father. And that is a belief that I cling to this day. I stick to it because the things that happened in my family as a result of all of this violence and chaos and mayhem, maybe the only way I can make sense of it is by holding fast to the belief that we were all going to be murdered. Because one day I got off the school bus when I was 12 years old, and my father was standing next to the snowbank waiting for me. And my father had never met me at the school bus. I didn't know my father knew what a school bus was. Okay. He could not have been a more detached and disinterested parent. But he met me at the school bus, gave me 20 minutes to pack, drove me to Jackson Hole, put me on a plane, and I didn't see my mom again for 16 years. So my relationship with my mom, you know, has this giant fracture in it. Before that day, she was the sun and moon and stars for me. I was a mommy's girl, and I would have traded anything in this world for my mother's life and safety, anything. I just didn't realize when I was a kid that the trade would be so costly, that I would lose my mom for all of my childhood and teen years. And one of the things I've struggled to come to terms with is the regret for those missing years, even though what I got in exchange was the opportunity to grow up with my grandmother, who is my most beloved person in my life. And she taught me everything. And the struggle that we had, you know, with my father and his various run-ins with law enforcement and incarceration, and we were on welfare, it was hard and it was scary. But I learned so much from that. And I'm grateful for those lessons. They've given me my life, you know? But you always have that sort of bittersweet ache of what if. You know, I just missed all this time with my mom. And I became someone who could live without her mom. I became a woman who could manage in this world. And I have two daughters, you know, and a very different relationship with them. And when my mom came back into my life in my late 20s, you know, we kind of, it was up and down, you know, we'd go through some good times. And then for me anyway, I would struggle with the past and we'd be not estranged, but distant. And then we'd reconnect. And this is the cycle that's been repeating. And I made the decision to go and spend some time with my mom, even though it's insane because she's like 1,000 miles away. So it's this crazy whirlwind weekend. But I wanted to do it because I know time is short. No matter how much time we have left, it's short. And I want to do better with the time that we have than we've done with the time that's behind us. So I'm having this wonderful weekend. We get our nails done. We go out to lunch at like some fancy girly bistro. We go shopping. We talk for hours and hours and hours. And my mom tells me a wild South Philly gangster story.
Don't pay retail for your diamond engagement ring or gift. Come to cleanorigin.com. Founded by a leading family in the diamond industry for more than a century, we're experts in lab-grown diamonds because that's all we do. Clean Origin, the only diamond jewelers who give you a 100-day, no-questions-asked return on your purchase. Head to cleanorigin.com or one of our retail stores and mention code RADIO10 for 10% off your purchase. That's cleanorigin.com, code RADIO10.
So let me set the scene. Both my parents grew up in South Philly in, you know, row homes. My dad in a little brick row home. My mom in a brownstone that I remember as a child. It was just like the most enchanted place ever. It had a full finished basement with black and white checkered tiled floors and a red Naugahyde bar, which is a mystery to me because her father never touched a drop of alcohol. And my grandmother, her mother, never went downstairs. So I'm not sure why they had it, but there it was. And then there was the main floor where, you know, you had like a living room and a dining room and floor to ceiling bookcases. Oh my God, as a child, I thought it was magical. And a kitchen with a built-in banquette, like a restaurant booth. You know what I'm talking about, Max?
Yeah.
And we would sit at this banquette in this booth, which was so exotic. And my grandma Bartholetti, that was my mom's maiden name, my grandma's giant Airedale Penny would be under the table gently growling at us because she hated children. And my grandmother would drink beer that she warmed up in a little pan on the stove because she came from an orphanage in Northern Ireland. And it was her culture's custom to drink their beer warmed up. So she would warm up a beer and sip on that. And she would give Penny a treat, and then we could all have a dog treat if we wanted one, because she thought that was hilarious. And this was just the height of insane urban luxury for me as a kid. So my mom grew up in this brownstone house on a little street in South Philly near a park. Today, that whole street has been knocked down. They're building luxury apartments, which is kind of sad to think about. And the neighborhood was filled with, it was an immigrant neighborhood filled with Italian-American immigrants and gangsters, as it happened, because that was kind of the way right up until like the 80s, 90s, and probably even today in South Philadelphia. The gangsters lived in very modest row homes like everybody else. And Max will back me up on this. Angelo Bruno lived a couple of doors down from my Aunt Margie and Uncle Whitey, in the most nondescript house you can imagine. And he was the head of organized crime in Philadelphia. The chicken man that you've heard about in the Springsteen song, Atlantic City, ditto. I mean, these guys, they were flashy, don't get me wrong, but they didn't live in a flashy way. And they were everywhere and everybody knew. Like when Angelo Bruno was assassinated, my Aunt Margie cried like real tears of grief. Because she said, I know he was a gangster and a killer, but he was such a good neighbor and we were safe. You were definitely safe if you lived a few doors down from Angelo Bruno, right? And so these were the characters that populated the streets of South Philly back then. There's a famous doo-wop singer that my dad hung out with. And literally, they would be on the street. This is like a movie, right? They'd be on the street corners in Philly doing that. I don't know who put the bop, shoo wop, shoo wop, shoo wop, or whatever that stuff was. And it was a very colorful time. And Philadelphia is a city, if you've never been, Philadelphia is a city of neighborhoods. You know, there's South Philly, There's West, which has its own complete separate vibe and culture and energy than you'll find in Center City or West Philly or North Philly or Germantown or Kensington. Each of these neighborhoods in Philly has its own food and music and energy. It's a really wonderful place. Now, it's a tough place if you're a soft-hearted person who can't handle aggression. Because in South Philly, a tiny grandmother with dyed magenta hair will straight up kick you in the nuts for looking at her funny, right? I mean, am I right? Like, it's just the way that it is. So I'm sitting with my mom, and she now lives a completely different life. She lives in the desert. She's really super duper active in her church. My mom, of course, was raised in the Roman Catholic faith and went to an all-girls Catholic school. I mean, the works. But after she married my stepfather, she converted to the Church of Latter-day Saints and became a Mormon, super involved in her church. A completely different life. So we're sitting there at the little island in her kitchen, and we're having a glass of wine, and we're chatting. And my mom said, you know, it's so funny. I'm remembering so many things talking to you, because I was asking questions about her childhood. Mm-hmm. My mom is going to be 80. And like I said, I don't know how much time we have left. And most of what should have been our lives together was taken from us. So like, I want to know everything. I want to know who she was and who her parents were and what was her life like, and tell me everything. So she said, you know, talking to you about these things, I'm remembering so many things. When I was 13, I babysat for a family in the neighborhood. They had two little boys. His name was Tony and his wife's name was Tootsie. And they were wonderful people, and they had a very active social life. And they paid me $2 an hour, which back then, this had to be in like the 50s, right? Back then would be a lot of money. And I'll just pause here, because you know I cannot control myself, and remind you all that restaurant workers are paid about $2 an hour now, and they're expected to round it out with tips. So $2 an hour may sound archaic, but it's not. Anywho, so my mom babysits for this family, and she babysat for them often because Tony and Tootsie went out on the town a lot, which to a 13-year-old girl was very glamorous, because my mom's own parents didn't live like that. Her dad was much, much older, and he spent his time at the racetrack. My pop-pop was a gambler. He spent his time betting on the horses. Her mom got a job working at the airport in Philadelphia. And so her mom worked a lot of shift work. You know, some days she'd be on days, sometimes on nights. And so her parents lived kind of separate lives. And I remember that when I was a child, they had separate bedrooms on separate floors of the house, which struck me as like so unbelievably strange. As it does when you're a kid, because you have certain ideas about what parents do, and grandparents. My grandparents were completely off the ranch when it came to normal behavior. They were a very unusual couple. And so here's my mom, 13, middle child, you know, her older sister who can do no wrong, younger brother who is the absolute beloved favorite, and my mom kind of bobbing along in the middle there, making her own way. And three times a week, she'd go to Tony and Tootsie's house. And she said Tony was always in a suit. Tootsie would be in like heels and, you know, jewelry and all made up. And it was incredibly glamorous. And sometimes they would ask her to babysit when they were home, just to kind of keep the kids out of their hair, as they said. And they paid well, and they were delightful people. And my mom had no idea that Tony was in the mob. And she found this out. Her mother had said something. But you know how it is when you're 13 years old. You barely pay attention to what adults say anyway. But after a time, you know, my mom was like, Not only did Tony and Tootsie go out all the time, but there were always all these other men around the house, also all dressed up and in suits and pretty flashy. And I have to say that my mom comes from a blue-collar, definitely lower middle class immigrant background, immigrant neighborhood. And the other men worked on the docks, you know, they worked in construction. They didn't wear suits and ties and cufflinks and jewelry. You know what I'm saying, Max? Like, yeah. They didn't look like, Tony and his crew didn't look like any of the other dads in the neighborhood. And so my mom was like, oh my God, they're not gangsters. You think you know everything. And her mother was like, you'll see, Franny, you'll see. And so one night she's babysitting for Tony and Tootsie like she'd done a gazillion times before. And she puts the little boys to bed and the phone rings. Of course, this is back in the day, so it's a landline. So she answers the landline telephone and she says, hello. And it's a man's voice. And the man says, is this sweet little Franny? And my mom, who is this? And the guy said, I can see you. And he described the dress that she was wearing. And then he told her that he would be coming by and told her in very graphic terms what he was going to do to her. And my mom was terrified. She's 13 years old. She hangs up the phone. And next to the phone was a little pad of paper, and there was a phone number on it. And Tony and his wife had told my mom every time they left the house, because there were no cell phones back then. Every time they left the house, they said, Franny, if there's any problem at all of any kind, you call this number. And she had never, okay, you call this number. This is the number you call. Anything, any issue at all, you call that number. And my mom had never had any need to call the number. But that night, she was crying, she was shaking, she was scared. She called the number and a man answered. And the man said, hello, who's this? And my mom said, my name is Franny and I'm Tony and Tootsie's babysitter. And a man just called here and told me he could see me. And then she described to the man on the other end of the phone what this caller had said to her. The man said, all right, we're going to hang up the phone. And I want you to go to the front door. And I want you to look out the front door. Don't unlock it. Don't open it. I want you to look out the front door. I'm going to be at that front door in a couple of minutes. And you'll see me. So now my mom is completely freaked out. 13 years old. There's no cable. There's no Sopranos. There's no Godfather movie. There's no Scream. You know, the call coming from inside the house. There's none of that. There's a 13-year-old girl who goes to an all-girls Catholic school, who lives in a family where the parents are always gone and barely communicate with each other. And she's been threatened like this on the phone. So she goes to the front door and she looks through the little window and there's a man on the steps and he turns around and he nods to her and she recognizes him. He's one of the guys that she sees frequently visiting the house. So now she's scared to death, but somebody's here. So she knows that whatever is going to happen next, this man is not going to come and get her as he had threatened to. A little bit of time goes by, and she hears voices outside. So she tiptoes back and she peeks through the door. And there on this little street in South Philly that's lit up by streetlights, you know, all the lights are on in all the homes. It's just a little working class street. She sees a group of men coming toward the house and they have another man and they're dragging him. They're holding him up, one man under each of the man's arms, but he's collapsed and they're dragging him down the street toward the house. And my mom is now in a full panic and they get to the front door. And now the man that's been standing there bangs on the door and says, Francis, open the door. And my mom opens the door. She's shaking. She's crying. And here comes this group of men dragging this other man that has been beaten to an absolute pulp. And one of the men is Tony, the dad that she babysits for. And Tony says to the man, say it. And the guy is like blubbering and spitting and he's bloody and he's on his knees. Say it. And this man repeats some of what he had said to my mom on the phone. And Tony says, Francis, do you recognize the voice? And my mom is crying and nodding and does not know. In that moment, no 13-year-old is equipped for this. No child is ready for this moment. because my mom has a dim understanding of how much more severe the consequences can be, but she can't lie to Tony. That's him. That's the voice. And Tony says, all right, go back inside, lock the door. He won't bother you again.
Whoa.
And that was that. Short while later, Tootsie comes home. Tony comes in. They pay my mom. They apologize to her profusely for what's happened. Tony says to her, look at me. I promise you that man will never, ever bother you again. I will not let anyone bother you. Do you believe me? And now she's crying and shaking. And he said, come on, I'm going to walk you home. And he walked her home and he stood there and waited till the front door opened. And there's her mom. And in she went. And after that night, every time, and my mom continued to babysit for these people. After that night, every time, Tony himself would walk my mother home and wait at the front door until the handoff was done. So time goes by and, you know, my mom grows up and eventually, and the boys grow up, Tony and Tootsie's kids grow up, and my mom gets married and goes off and makes the life such as it was with my father. And then time passes and we move out west. My parents split up. My mom remarries my stepfather. Time passes. And now she's back east for her own mother's funeral. And she has some family members from Ted's side with her for this. And while they're in town, they go to this famous, legendary restaurant in South Philly that unfortunately is gone today. But if you're from that part of the world, you may be familiar with Palumbo's. Do you remember Palumbo's, Max?
I have heard of it, yes.
Iconic, iconic Goomba South Philly restaurant. So my mom, you know, wants to take her Wyoming kinfolks out for a real Philly style throwdown. So they go to Palumbo's for dinner and they're sitting there eating dinner. And the maitre d' brings another party to a table nearby. And it's these older couples and they are dressed to the absolute nines. And my mom looks up and she makes eye contact with the man and they look at each other and he stands up and he says, Francis? And she says, Tony? And they get up and they hug and how are you? Oh, you're all grown up. And, you know, how are the kids? And to the family members sitting at my mom's table, because now there is the Godfather. There is all of this knowledge about like what a gangster looks like. My Wyoming family members have never seen so much jewelry and cufflinks and pinstripe suits and silk ties. And they've never seen anything like this that wasn't in a movie. And they're watching with their jaws hanging open while my mom, you know, catches up old home week with this table full of mobsters. My mom comes back down and Lisa, one of my relatives, says, Franny, how do you know those people? They look like gangsters. And my mom said, oh, they are. I used to babysit for their kids. And everybody had a good laugh and a great dinner and, you know, went on their way. And not too much long after that, Palumbo's closed forever. And I'm going to guess that Tony and Tootsie have gone on to that flashy Copacabana in the sky because, of course, they were at least 10 or more years older than my mom. And my mom said that sometimes she thinks about the part of her life, that chapter of her life. And it feels as unreal to her as it probably sounds to you. But the truth is, when you think about it, the world is not divided between, you know, the people that do like a regular 9-to-5 kind of book job and the people that are on the more illegal fringes. You know, there's not a separate neighborhood for people who rob and cheat and lie and kill. We're all mixed in together. And sometimes the family down the street is up to some things that you can't really imagine and that are none of your business to think about. And every once in a while, something happens that feels like a movie, but it's happening to you. That was the night for my mom when she was 13, babysitting for that gangster and his wife. Whoa. And is that not the wildest South Philly story you've heard in a while?
That's crazy.
Isn't that awesome? So to wrap up, I had a great visit with my mom. And I left when I got on that plane to come home. I felt like I understood her a little bit better than maybe I ever have. And so I'm going to say to you right now, I don't know if your mama babysat for a mobster and then watched a guy get beaten half to death in front of her, but it's worth asking. Because I bet your parents and grandparents, I bet they have some stories that are just wild. And whatever you do, get those stories now. Don't let them take them to the grave. That's it for this episode of The Oddcast. We drop new episodes every Monday. And on Fridays, we have our brand new podcast, True Weird Stuff. We hope you'll check that out too. Whatever you decide, thank you so much for listening. And y'all, don't be threatening the babysitter. We'll see you next time on The Oddcast.
Hey, thank you so much for listening to the Bob and Sherry podcast and the Bob and Sherry Oddcast. We would love if you would subscribe, rate and review, and share it with a friend on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, wherever you go. And thank you again for listening.
Don't pay retail for your diamond engagement ring or gift. Come to cleanorigin.com. Founded by a leading family in the diamond industry for more than a century, we're experts in lab-grown diamonds because that's all we do. Clean Origin, the only diamond jewelers who give you a 100-day, no-questions-asked return on your purchase. Head to cleanorigin.com or one of our retail stores and mention code RADIO10 for 10% off your purchase. That's cleanorigin.com, code RADIO10.